Sutra, class 11, chapter 14. Text number 17. Yaskinchanam mayam rakta chetasa. Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification, such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. Translation responsively. Those who are without any desire for sense gratification, for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful, without false ego, and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification. Such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. The pure devotees always experience the transcendental bliss in their service to Sri Krishna, the reservoir of pleasure. Thus they are completely detached from material pleasure and do not desire even liberation. Since all others have some personal desire, they cannot experience such happiness. Pure devotees always desire to give Krishna conscious happiness to all others, and therefore they are called Mahanta, or great souls. In the course of a devotee's service, many opportunities for sense gratification arise, but a pure devotee is not tempted or attracted and does not fall down from his exalted transcendental position. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Vinandana Sulakaya Chakshunyutam Yena Tasmaya Shri Purve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manavisam Sapitam Yena Bhutali Swayam Chakadamaya Dharati Swapaitikam Pancha Kalpatri Vishra Kripa Sindhu Vyaya Vishra Patitanam Pavne Vyu Vaishnava Vyu Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shiva Sadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Shabbat Krishna Prasthavatuli Srimati Deva Vichaswami Chanamani Om Vishabhadaya Krishna Prasthavatuli Srimati Bhakti Vrinda Swami Chanamani Namaste Sarasati Devi Gaurvani Prasham Nirvikesha Srimati Vashti Chaja Satyavani So Lord Krishna is explaining the yoga system, and in this particular section where he's speaking to Uddhava, Krishna's very dear friend, Krishna's very dear cousin or brother. Krishna is revealing to Uddhava the topmost jewel or the topmost secret in spiritual life, and that is undivided, unadulterated, pure devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord. So the first few texts in this chapter, Krishna was explaining the love that the Akinchana devotee has for him. But now in the next few verses, Krishna himself is explaining how much he himself is in love with his pure devotees and how much he himself serves the devotee. So this is something, of course, in the last purport, Srila Prabhupada's servants are mentioning how one cannot actually try to materially, with a materialistic mind, logically try to understand the position of Krishna and a devotee, and how Krishna wants to serve, how Krishna wants to be subordinate towards his pure devotees. It's only simply a matter of practicing loving devotional service. That's the only way we can actually understand Krishna and his activities. So the reason why most people actually cannot understand Krishna's activities, or why most conditioned souls become so envious of Krishna, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was explaining in his in the pastime of Govardhan Puja in the Krishna book, how the reason why we become so envious of Krishna is because we cannot perform the type of pastimes that Krishna can. So we cannot go lift Govardhan Hill, we cannot enjoy the Rasa Leela, we cannot perform all the activities Krishna did when he was a child, nor can we enjoy to the greatest degree that Krishna can. So the living entity is part and parcel of Krishna, which means we have those same qualities of Krishna in minute quantities. But what, when it comes to the Akinchana devotee, when it comes to the pure devotee whose mind is only fixed on serving Krishna, then that devotee has only one desire. So the pure devotee's desire, his entire existence is just to serve Krishna. He doesn't want anything else. And to get to that platform, of course, we have to uproot, or we have to get rid of the one thing that stands between us and performing pure devotional service, and that is the ahankar. That is our false ego. So when you break down ahankar, when you break down what the false ego is, you know, it's just not merely trying to explain the false ego. Yes, you know, it's part of the subtle body and it has the samskaras and past impressions from previous lives. But it goes even beyond that when we try to understand how the false ego expands into the concept of me, myself, and I, into identifying with the body, into thinking, I'm Asian, I'm African, expanding into the community, into your family, becoming attached to temporary things. That's an expansion of our false ego. And when we become covered by that false ego, we further go into deep ignorance. And avijja, as explained, of course, in the Nectar of Devotion, is logically explained how it's because of avijja or ignorance that we landed in this position in the material world. But this nature of Krishna's tathasta shakti, this nature of Krishna's marginal potency, is that we have this independence to either serve Krishna or Krishna's external energy. So depending on how we want to act towards Krishna, will either enhance our false ego or will actually get rid of our false ego. So the false ego can only be actually uprooted, it can only be destroyed by the process of bhakti. No other process can actually completely get rid of the false ego. So the process of devotional service burns away every single root or desire, or even the residue of wanting to perform sinful activities. Devotional service completely burns that away. Whereas in other processes, we can see, Srila Prabhupada explains in different parts of the Bhagavatam how there can still be a few traces of sinful desires. How we have our Parabdha Karma, and our Aparabdha Karma, we have unmanifested sinful reactions that are still lingering in our consciousness. And if we don't completely engage our very existence, our consciousness in Krishna's service, then those unmanifested activities will soon manifest. So the great potency of devotional service is that it gets rid of the main issue of why we're here, and that is the ahankar. So no other process can actually extinguish that great enemy of the living entity. So once the false ego or the ahankar, this understanding of thinking that we're the body and that we're the enjoyers of the body, and that everything else should be centered in our life, everything else should be centered to give pleasure towards the body, then if we don't get rid of that, then we keep on coming back into this cycle of samsara, of repeated birth and death. And it's also interesting that for a pure devotee, because his desires one, his desires merged with Krishna, he, in the previous, I think it was text 13, it explains how the pure devotee doesn't even mind having to come back and take birth again and have to go through the same experience only to serve Krishna. So in Shikshasakam, fourth verse, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Vajagat Isakamayi Mama Janmani Janmaneshvari Bhavatad Bhakti Ahai Tuki Toyi. Lord Chaitanya himself is explaining that he does not want any desire for personal liberation, or he doesn't want any number of followers, he doesn't want the association of the opposite sex, he just wants the Lord devotional service birth after birth. So for a pure devotee, for an Akinchana devotee, it doesn't matter where they are in creation as long as they're engaged in the Lord's service. So that's a very deep understanding of the love that a devotee has for the Lord, and that, you know, a devotee can go through all sorts of trials and tribulations, but they know that their Lord and Master Krishna is always there. And Krishna is like, Krishna protects all the living entities. Krishna is like a tree that we all take shelter of. So in this translation, there's one point that's being mentioned here, how all of us are searching for peace. And of course we cannot attain peace without being happy, and for one to become happy we have to understand who we are. So you can ask different people as you're walking about, or you know, you can ask, who are you? And they'll tell you the different designations. I'm a woman, I'm a lawyer, I'm a wife, I'm a student, I'm a lawyer. So many different so many different functions that we have in society, but without knowing one's real, without knowing one's real identity, how can we actually have a clear and tranquil mind? It's like getting into a car and just driving without a destination. So we have this, when we're covered by this Ahankar principle, when we're covered by desire for personal gratification, then we have this deep cloud, this covering, this intense illusion that actually continues to make us suffer in this world. And the little bit of relief from suffering, people call that happiness. So we can see that we work so hard, or those whose consciousness is devoid of Krishna work so hard day and night, and then for a few minutes or a few seconds of the week, they indulge in some kind of sense gratification, and that's what they call happiness. So that slight intoxication or intense shelter of the modes of material nature or sense gratification gives them relief from the intense suffering. So for them, that is actual enjoyment. For them, that is happiness. But we understand through the eyes of Shastra that it's not happiness. And the more you endeavor in material, association, the more suffering you're going to incur in life. So whether it's becoming wealthy, famous, whether you want to become very knowledgeable or intelligent, it's very stressful. You have to keep up all the time. I have a few friends who work in the IT industry, and they constantly have to upgrade because there's so many new systems that come up. So if you're not up to tech, if you're not up to date with the latest, someone else comes in and you lose your job. Or if you stay in a specific suburb, well, I know from where I come from in South Africa, there's specific suburbs that for you to stay there, you have to have a specific amount of money in the bank. So you have to have at least 1 million rands in the bank. And you have to at least drive a Mercedes or a BMW to live in that area. So all night, all day for the rest of your life, you're just working at maintaining that. And what happens, of course, is that because everything then is devoid of all, everything that you do is just centered around you. So everything else is neglected. We can see how much family is neglected in the community, how kids are not being taken care of. And when children are not taken care of, and when women are not protected, we know what happens in society. But Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that when women are not taken care of, when children are not looked after, when the brahminical class is not protected, when the cows are not protected, and when the elders are not protected in society, then society can't actually function. So we can analyze all these five different points, and we can see that, in Kali Yuga we've passed it, because none of the above are being protected at all. Where there's so many slaughterhouses that are being maintained, there's so many children who are loitering the streets without parents, there's so many women who are not given protection, and most of the time they don't want protection because this intense false ego, thinking that they're the body, they allow themselves to be exploited by the body. So this desire for personal sense gratification doesn't only affect one person, but it's like a bushfire which, in a few seconds it just completely destroys so much around the environment. So personal sense gratification is destructive, because we're denying the fact that Krishna exists. When we don't take notice of Krishna's material energy, when we don't respect Krishna's energy, if we think that we're more powerful than Krishna's energy, then Krishna's energy shows us just how powerful we're not. So when you're in a relationship, because bhakti yoga, this process of devotional service, means that we're trying to cultivate a relationship with Krishna. So we have to do certain things. It's a personal relationship. So we can't be impersonal. when we do get impersonal, then, you know, we know what the result is. All of us know how to be impersonal. You know, if we're in university, my spiritual master used to use this example. Well, on me, he'd say, well, what do you do when a member of the opposite sex comes and wants to start chatting to you? And I'm like, okay, I give him the cold shoulder. He's like, yeah, you know how to be impersonal, right? I'm like, yeah, I know how to be impersonal. Then he said, well, don't do that to Krishna. Don't be impersonal to Krishna. Because then that's not a relationship. If you're trying to practice, if you're trying to perform devotional service, we cannot be impersonal towards Krishna. And that means that we cannot avoid or we cannot neglect Krishna's energy. So we understand how the material nature functions. We understand how the modes are pushing. We understand how powerful the modes are. But the highest understanding, of course, is to understand that everything is coming from Krishna. And what Krishna wants us to do is to take shelter of His lotus feet. Krishna wants us to surrender to His lotus feet. And Krishna frankly tells us in Bhagavad Gita that his external energy is just insurmountable. It is difficult to overcome, and the only way to do that is to take shelter of His lotus feet. So this is possible, and the perfection of that, of course, is given in the examples of the different pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. That Krishna is performing His leelas, His pastimes with certain devotees just to show us that, yes, I will give you protection. The previously on Govardhan Puja, when we were reading from Bhagavatam, we understand Krishna and one of the purport was explaining, Srila Prabhupada's servants explaining in the purport that Krishna actually performed that pastime to firstly, you know, smash Lord Indra's pride, but to also remind His pure devotees that it's only Him that they should take shelter of. Only Krishna can actually remove all the suffering, all the anxiety. Only Krishna, no one else. So all activities are geared or directed towards Krishna. And why should we doubt Krishna? Krishna hasn't let us down. Whereas the material energy constantly keeps letting us down. If you can all write down on paper how many times the material energy keeps on bashing us, the list would be endless. But still we keep holding on, we have so much faith in something that completely bombards us all the time. Whereas Krishna just says, you know, just chant Hare Krishna, just offer prasadam, come to the temple, see my Aisha Vigraha form. Krishna comes as the deity form because we're not qualified to see Krishna in His... Now, of course, the deity form is none. It is Krishna. But Krishna comes in His deity form for us to be able to have this love and reciprocation. So our vision is still not perfect. Some of us still think that Krishna, you know, the deity form is just made of different material elements. We can't see Krishna. Krishna is on the altar and we can't hear His flute. So you can understand that there's a lot of contamination that's still in the heart, a lot of samskaras that we still have to let go. But one of the most important thing, of course, to understand is that Srila Prabhupada would always stress that we have to be patient in devotional service. That not everything will come automatically, not everything is going to come right this minute. And the reason why, of course, we get impatient is because in the time that we're living in, we're conditioned to getting everything that we want, you know, at the press of a button. If you want to make some hot tea, you know, you can just stick it in the microwave. Or if you want to bake some bread, you can go buy a mixed-up container with ingredients inside. But one of the qualities, of course, of a Vaishnava is patience. So we have to be patient to know. We have to be patient to know that Krishna will reveal Himself, and it's up to Krishna because ultimately He is the supreme controller. But if we sincerely desire to have darshan of the Lord, then we should just follow the process, given by the acharyas. We should follow the process given by Srila Prabhupada. And then we will have darshan of Krishna. And I was thinking, actually, when I joined 6 years ago, I remember it was during Kartik. And I remember I was with a friend of mine and I was being told to offer a lamp. And I was offering a lamp every day. But I remember that I never saw the deities. My eyes were so covered I couldn't see Gornitai. He had Gornitai in that size. I don't know why I was offering the lamp or to who I was offering the lamp to. All I knew was like, okay, it's auspicious month, I'm going to get benefits, so I'll offer the lamp. But I never saw the deity form. Only after a few weeks, I started seeing Gornitai. So you can understand 8,400,000 different species of life, and that has created a lot of bad impressions. So that is what we actually just have to get rid of, because if we still have those in our consciousness, then we can't access, you know, that causeless mercy of Gornitai. But we can see that with the potency of Srila Prabhupada and a bona fide spiritual master, the process that they've given us, with which they haven't adulterated or they haven't changed, it's so potent and powerful. And because Srila Prabhupada is following in the footsteps of devotees like Uddhava, that Srila Prabhupada, you know, gave us so much. Srila Prabhupada gave us Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know, but for me personally, I don't know what I would be engaged in if there wasn't Srimad Bhagavatam. What I would read. There's so much nectar in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Bhagavad Gita as it is. So in different pastimes of Bhagavatam, we see how Krishna maintains the words of his pure devotees, or even just his devotees. If you read closely Srila Prabhupada, he'll mention whether it's just a devotee or pure devotee. So we see with Lord Brahma, when he gave the benediction to Hiranyakashipu, his boon to become immortal, Krishna didn't interfere with that. Although Krishna knew, you know, why did Lord Brahma do this? You know, he just wants Hiranyakashipu gold, soft beds. He just wants sense gratification. So why would Lord Brahma give him such a benediction? But still, Krishna has the power to override, because, you know, Lord Brahma is born of, you know, the navel of Lord Vishnu. So Krishna is avatari. All the other avatars or incarnations come from him. So he could change everything at any time. But Krishna maintains the words of his devotee and he doesn't interfere. And Srila Prabhupada has told us in different instances in his books, in his lectures, that if you just follow the process given by the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, if you follow the process given in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, all we need to do is chant Hare Krishna on a prasadam and attentively hear Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, associate with devotees and reside in the holy places. All these five are the most potent forms to actually get rid of this ahankar. These are the most potent forms that we can actually enter into this mood of wanting to serve Krishna and becoming this akinchana devotee, becoming a paramahamsa. So we're in the material world, of course, it's a bad bargain, but the greatest thing about being here is that Lord Gauranga himself has just appeared. And we can still go to its birthplace. We can still go and take bath in the Yamuna. We can still go and see Govardhan. We can still do all these different things. There's still chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. So there's so much wealth in Kali Yuga that's just there for the devotees to be able to always remember and think of Krishna. And by performing activities like this, our consciousness gets fixed on Krishna. Because gradually this false ego thinking, I'm the center of the universe, thinking that I'm the most important person or everything is just made for my pleasure, you know, by practicing devotional service, you know, our pride just gets smashed. And it's such a wonderful process that amongst the association of devotees, that all these bad qualities come out. And then because devotees are so kind, they point them out to us. And then we get to know where we're at. And the thing is not to get stuck into thinking, oh, I'm such a demon or whatever, or I'll never make it. You know, devotees are actually very merciful, because if we're in the association of those who don't know anything about devotional service, they can actually increase our pride. They can actually increase our false ego. But devotees, because they read the books, they can know when we're being proud. Devotees can know when we're being envious. Devotees get a sharp vision and they correct us. And in that way, it's devotees who are actually pushing us towards Krishna. So if we didn't have devotee association, it would be a struggle. So we get devotee association, we get association with Srila Prabhupada in his purports. And Srila Prabhupada's purport, in different purports, Srila Prabhupada always stresses certain points. Srila Prabhupada will always stress, you know, chanting Hare Krishna and associating with devotees. And most importantly, Srila Prabhupada will always stress, you know, following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas and serving the devotees with humility. Because if we honestly think that devotees are great, if we have gratitude, then we want to serve. But if we don't have an understanding of the sacrifice that devotees have made, then there's no gratitude, then we're not grateful. And then we don't understand the great wealth that we have within devotional service. So this is a great wealth that we have. This text shows us that by actually having the desire only to serve Krishna, then and only then will we be happy. And only then will our false ego become smashed. And only then will we get detached from enjoying in this material world. But as long as we're still feeding our false ego, then we want to have, you know, personal desires. Then we want to enjoy in this material world with all its allurements. So this is the greatest trick, this is the greatest difficulty that we may face. Because, you know, for a devotee, it's very obvious. We don't go to a pub and start drinking it up, or grossly attack others, or strangle someone in the ashram, or, you know, on a gross level, we don't do stuff like that. But on a subtle level, there's so many things go on in here. As we chant Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada would say, it's like you're cleaning the attic or your storeroom, which you haven't done in millions and millions of years. So when you start doing that, all the dust comes up. And no one likes to be choked by dust. So when you chant Hare Krishna, all these impressions are coming and they have to go out. It's not like you dust, you know, you start chanting and then you stop. And it's like, well, we haven't really done much. So the more we chant Hare Krishna, sometimes you'll realize for yourself that more stuff comes out from the heart, because it's a purifying process. So you chant Hare Krishna sincerely, then all the bad things have to come out from the heart. And I remember for myself, when I started chanting Hare Krishna, I started thinking about things I did when I was 3. Or I started thinking about, you know, an interaction I had with someone when I was 7 in kinder or nursery or primary 1. You know, things that have just been stored. But because these are blocking the process of devotional service, they have to come out. And the best way for them to come out, of course, is within the association of devotees. So a pure devotee is called a Mahatma, a great soul. And this is because of their nature of being everyone's well-wisher. And the greatest, of course, the greatest example we can use is Srila Prabhupada himself. And Srila Prabhupada, you know, he didn't care where anyone was coming from. If you read Lilamrita, Srila Prabhupada just went what would be seen as the worst place to try and go preach. because you have druggies or whatever, whereas different yogis, they went to more the upscale areas in America where there was wealthy people. But Srila Prabhupada, as he was guided by Krishna himself, you know, he just went there on a mission to preach. And because of his sincerity, that he's actually so successful. And no one can even come close to what Srila Prabhupada has done. No one can amount to what Srila Prabhupada has done. So this is when someone is a well-wisher, they just want the best for you. So Srila Prabhupada would wake up and translate Srimad Bhagavatam just so that we can be able to read it and get purified. So this is one of the examples of how the pure devotee is such a well-wisher of all living entities. Srila Prabhupada wouldn't even want to, if he was being disturbed by mosquitoes or there was a little bug crawling, he'd just say, just let him go. You know, always showing by his example, Srila Prabhupada was very gentle and at the same time he was very firm. So these are qualities that we ourselves would aspire to develop as time goes on. So no matter, I'll just finish off with this, and again with Srila Prabhupada, that no matter how much opulence one may have, it still does not contaminate the consciousness. The Srila Prabhupada had so much opulence, you know, so many temples and so many beautiful deities and so much land. But Srila Prabhupada would always say, you know, in his humble mood, Srila Prabhupada would always give credit to his disciples and say, you know, they're doing this work on my behalf. They're doing this preaching on my behalf. And once when I was reading Burjan Prabhu's, my glorious master, when Burjan Prabhu and Mother Jagaturini were preaching in Asia, Srila Prabhupada was once in London, and I forget who he was with, but Srila Prabhupada just suddenly started crying, and they asked Srila Prabhupada what's wrong, and Srila Prabhupada mentioned that, you know, I have these two disciples, Jagaturini and Burijan, and on my behalf they're struggling very hard to preach. And Srila Prabhupada was very grateful for that. So the little endeavors that we make in devotional service, they don't go unrecognized by the Supreme Lord and His pure devotee. So we should do whatever service that we have, we should be very grateful. This is the highest service that we can have in the most intimate, if you can say, in the topmost yoga system, a system that gives us pure, unalloyed service at the lotus feet of the Lord. And that's most easily done by following the process given by the acharyas, the spiritual master, and humbly serving the devotees. So I'll just read the translation again and then ask for devotees' comments. Those who are without any desire for personal gratification, whose minds are always attached to me, who are peaceful without false ego and merciful to all living entities, and whose consciousness is never affected by opportunities for sense gratification, such persons enjoy in me a happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. Srila Prabhupada ki. Comments or questions?
Question?
Yep.
Earlier in the class you said that we have a choice in the matter of being engaged in Krishna's energy or material energy. Sometimes it seems that it's a little bit mixed, it's not one or the other, that some things are Krishna conscious, some things are Krishna's energy, and other things are mind and material energy. How can we understand that it's a choice like that? It seems that it's always.
Yeah, like sometimes we find ourselves being pushed more on one end. Is that what you mean? Like sometimes we have to really work hard out there to maintain ourselves. So it is something, that's why it's very important to take shelter of someone who can help us understand how to have that balance, because it's more a question of balance and understanding our different activities, making sure that we're not over-endeavoring, because sometimes we may think that we're, you know, we're doing the right thing and it can end up as an over-endeavor. So we should also check the motive behind what we're, the different activities that we're performing. So we take shelter of someone who can guide us in our activities, whether we're working or we're students, or we have a family, but always to have the shelter of someone who can actually guide us and show us if we're doing some things wrong or if we tend to go a bit misguided. So it's more a question of balance and just reminding ourselves why we're in this in the long run. So it's very tricky, because sometimes what may seem to be, you know, we might think, oh, this is I'm performing devotional service, but because of our previous conditioning, you know, because the nature of the soul is we want to enjoy, we want to be happy, and then because of the different conditions we've had in previous births, things keep popping up and kind of mix our devotional service. So we have to be aware of, you know, the how the process works. We have to be aware of how material energy can become tricky at times. And when we kind of understand that and we couple that with, you know, getting advice from a senior or someone who's experienced in that field, then we can train ourselves in that way to become expert in balancing our spiritual life, whether we're staying in a temple or working, maintaining a family or whatever. Is that satisfactory? Any question or comment?
Yes,
very similar. Srila Prabhupada would often give the example of the cat carrying the kitten and the cat carrying the rat. So from an external vision, it looks like we're just doing the same thing. You know, we're eating, we're selling books on the street, we have restaurants. You know, it might seem like, oh, we're just doing the same. Everyone else is doing it. But the consciousness is different. So we're doing it for Krishna. And this is something that people, they don't understand. And when you go to urban yoga all the time, people ask, do you get paid? You know, you teach yoga, you're here so many nights, do you get paid? I'm like, no. I do it because I want to do it. And this is the point that's been made in the purport that, I'll just read it. It says here, such persons enjoy mere happiness that cannot be known or achieved by those lacking such detachment from the material world. So because some people are, you know, the consciousness is still very thick and covered, they can't actually understand the activities of devotees. What to speak of pure devotees? Just the simple things that we do, that we try as much as possible not to have any motive behind it, but they just don't understand because we're trying to put Krishna in the center, not ourselves. This is something that's very tricky for someone with material consciousness. So this question of just going through the process and just sticking to the process, as Srila Prabhupada would say, we will attain success. And the example of patience, Srila Prabhupada always said, you know, when you switch off a fan, It doesn't stop spinning immediately, but gradually with time it will stop. So we stick with the process, and sometimes our ego pops in and out. But because we're still practicing, after some time, if we follow what's been given, then we can actually attain success.
Trials and tribulations are presented along the way, you should see them as beneficial.
Yeah. Right. They actually make you stronger. I mean, I've had certain situations, you know, while you're in the midst of it, you just don't know how you're going to survive. You don't know what the outcome will be. But when you pass on and then you look back and you're thinking, that was so great because you're praying like anything and you're taking so much shelter. So Krishna is expert at increasing our longing for his blessings and Srila Prabhupada. Okay. Yes.
If someone comes in the temple for doing arti, candle arti, what type of benefit he derives? Like he doesn't chant nothing.
But he just offers a lamp. Yeah, well, he's making benefit. That's, you know, how in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, there's no loss or diminution, and a little advancement in spiritual life can save you from gliding down into the lower species. So even if we're not conscious of what we're doing, even if we just walk in and offer obeisances, we have begun our spiritual life. And even if we don't take it on in this life, you know, we're going to continue, and we'll start at 5%, not at zero. So like I gave the example of myself when I started going to the temple. I didn't know what I was doing. I was offering a lamp. I couldn't even see the deities. But somehow by Krishna's mercy and the devotees, I started practicing devotional service. So sometimes, you know, we just see a devotee wearing dhoti or tilak. You make advancement. So the tilak is a sign of Lord Vishnu. It's Vaishnava attire. You come here to the temple, you smell the incense, you peek in, you see the deity form, or that's advancement. And then it's just a matter of time. You gradually keep on increasing till you fully take up devotional service. That's what I'm It's like when you have an intoxicated king and he takes his jewels. Once in a while he takes his crown and he gives it away. And because this month is Srimati Radharani's month, and who's more compassionate than Srimati Radharani? So whatever simple thing that we do, she's pleased during Kartik. So is today the last day or is it tomorrow? Tomorrow is the last day of Kartik, so we can continue with our Kartik Vrat. Srila Prabhupada once said, you know, if Kartik means you take on extra during the month and then you try and continue it for the rest of your devotional service. So if you were chanting 32 rounds, okay, I'm not suggesting that everyone has spent late night chanting, but we should try to take on the mood that we have during Kartik of doing more service and more chanting and more reading and association, and you'll see what it does for your spiritual life. Thank you. Hare Krishna.